Content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. Hello, my name is Joe Austin, and I'm your host for today's episode of Legal Matters, an original program produced in the Triangle Radio Reading Service Studio. I'm ably assisted today by Shay Hargett Hill, our engineer. For the next half hour, we'll be exploring topics to champion your legal rights, to obtain equal access and full participation in your community, and for achieving goals of independent living. Every fourth Tuesday of each month, you can find us here providing news and information from federal and state agencies as well as nonprofit organizations that promote information on law supporting independent living. In today's episode, our guest is Derek Dittmer. Derek, thank you for joining us.
Oh, Joe, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Derek is a law student at Campbell Law School here in Raleigh and comes highly recommended by Dean Melissa Essery. Derek, you'll like to know that she spoke very highly of you and recommended you. So
yes, sir. Now that I know that, I'll make sure the check clears, shall
okay.
I?
Okay. very good.
Yes,
very
sir.
Good. Derek, we know that you are a law student at Campbell University. I think you said you're from Raleigh originally. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I was born and raised up in North Raleigh, went to Sanderson High School, and took a couple years out of North Carolina, went to get my undergraduate at Randolph-Macon College in Ashland, Virginia, which is a wonderful little institution that did very well by me, and now I'm back here in my third year at Campbell.
Fantastic. Well, what did you major in at Randolph-Macon?
Yes, sir. I was a political science and communications double major, but I went in to study music, so thank God for liberal arts.
I'm a musician myself. What's yes, your sir. Instrument?
Well, I don't know if I play it well, but I enjoy playing the guitar and doing some songwriting on the side. It's sort of my hobby when law school gets too much. It's just so different from reading cases and doing writing.
Keep that up. It will be a wonderful outlet.
Yes, sir. What about you?
I'm a saxophonist, and I used to play with a rock and roll band called Crisis.
Fantastic.
And we had a small but very disturbed following in Oriental, North Carolina. But,
yes, sir.
Shout out for the old Crisis band. But
yes, sir.
You grew up in Raleigh
yes,
and
sir.
Sanderson High School, undergrad at Randolph-Macon. Were you always interested in going to law school?
Yes and no. My mother will always tell you that I came out arguing, which I would say no, I didn't, but then I'd be sort of feeding in, so it's a little catch-22 situation there. I went to the school for music, like I said. Though I'd had some experience in law, we have a wonderful program here in Wake County and in other counties in North Carolina called Teen Court. Teen Court is basically when we have people that are under 18 on their first offense for a criminal charge. They are basically pled into this program, and they are represented and they are prosecuted by trained high schoolers, and there is a judge, usually a practicing attorney or an actual judge, and there's a jury made up of their peers, other students through the program. So they plead into this out of their misdemeanor case, and they come in and actually are in court on a Tuesday night in a real courtroom and are prosecuted and defended by high schoolers and are given a sentence from their jury of their peers, typically community service, which they then complete, and it's their way of being able to take care of their record and move on with their lives. I got to participate with that program for 2 years, and that got me excited about law. And between that and debating heavily in college, both competitively and in classes, I fell in love with it. I started applying for law schools my senior year, took the LSAT, and it's been smooth sailing ever since, or at least relatively smooth sailing.
That was good experience then. So
yes, sir.
Did you prosecute, defend, or both?
I did both. They put me on defense a little more because I really liked getting to know people and learn their stories. Though when they had a person come in for, if I recall correctly, perhaps shooting a BB gun at the short bus, which carries special needs students, they had to have the blind person prosecute because that's just justice.
Very good.
Yes.
Good background for the law. You've had experience doing cross-examination and direct examination and preparing a case for trial, and that's great preparation.
It's such a delight. And now at Campbell Law, which is a massive advocacy school. It's been ranked one of the best advocacy schools in the nation with three fully functioning courtrooms. Head of advocacy, Dan Tilley, and our Dean Rich Leonard, former bankruptcy judge, have both just done an incredible job finding donors and building Campbell into a hub of advocacy. We actually have a very prestigious Cheshire Schneider advocacy scholarship. And this is a full-paid three-year scholarship by two of the people that did defense in the big Duke lacrosse case about 10 years ago. And they look for some of the best young advocates in the nation. And finding none of those, they were very kind and generous and found me deserving of this scholarship. So I've been competing on our trial teams and competing in other moot court as well throughout law school. So I've had multiple chances between that and just taking trial advocacy classes to prepare quite a few cases and do directing, cross-examination, openings, closings, and to travel a bit of the country.
Fantastic.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm a Luddite and a student from the 60s, and I actually got my law degree in 78 after a few turns and whatnots. But
yes, sir.
What I recall is big, thick books and close reading and all of that. And so tell me a little bit about you. Sight impaired, obviously. And
yes, sir.
We've got Howard here, your service dog, a fine-looking fella.
Thank you, sir. One of us has to be.
Yeah. So, no, you're a handsome guy, too. So when did you lose your sight?
Well, Joe, I was born, I have a twin brother as well, and we were both born with Leber's congenital amaurosis, or at least a close cousin thereof. So I've been sight impaired my whole life.
Okay.
Which honestly, makes it just everything I've known. And just I want to say I appreciate, you telling me going to school in 78. I used to work in California over the summers through the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco, and I'd go up and be teaching music at a camp for the blind in Napa. They basically paid me to play guitar on top of a mountain, which I would have done for free. And I loved getting to hear the stories from, campers and people that went to school in the 60s and 70s, pre-IDEA, pre-Americans with Disabilities Act, back when schools really were a little more comfortable saying no, and in fact were legally protected in saying no. So I just want to thank you for, I want to pick your brain on it, what it was like to go to school back then and looking how far it comes, growing up, being born in 94, I'm very aware that I'm one of the first generations of the post-ADA disability movement, and it's huge, and I'm very thankful for those that have come before.
Well, you were born a little bit before we lost the great Jerry Garcia, and you've been to San Francisco and played guitar. Are you a Jerry Garcia aficionado or more of a folk or jazz?
I respect Mr. Garcia's work quite a bit. I like a lot more of the folk music. I, grew up and listening to James Taylor and things like that, so that's a big influence of mine.
Great.
Yes, sir.
He's got some wonderful chords, doesn't he?
Oh, very difficult to play, yes, sir.
Yeah. So kindergarten through 12th grade, you were accommodated. Tell us about that process.
Sure. Well, I was very lucky in order to be able to go to preschool at Governor Moorhead School for the Blind, where we got some basic Braille skills and tactile and just sort of got a little normalized, though I'd never describe myself as normal. But kindergarten through 12th grade, when we were old enough, we became, referring to my brother as well, but laptop users and avid users of JAWS, the occasional refreshable Braille display, and outside of foreign languages and math and some of the sciences, I really didn't use Braille all that much. I've got a tactile watch on, and I'll check to make sure room numbers and things are right, and occasionally use a slate and stylus in court. But there wasn't that much Braille, particularly starting into about high school. And in college, there was actually very little to almost none. It's all been JAWS and Microsoft Windows and things like that, figuring it out.
Then Randolph-Macon, the experience there, tell us about that. Because one of the things that, just by way of background, one of the things we talk about in this program is the Rehab Act of 1973 and ADA and the requirements of educational institutions to accommodate. So how about college? What sort of accommodations did you experience there?
I was very lucky at Randolph-Macon. It was a family to me in about 100 different ways. I miss it desperately. It's a beautiful little college if you ever get the chance, right on the tracks, the railroad tracks up through Virginia. I was very lucky in that I had a great team of people that would help, both faculty and staff, students. Anybody that I asked was willing to really go to bat for me. Our head of disability support was a gentleman named Jack Trammell. Dr. Trammell was just incredible on getting me what I needed. All of my books would be electronic, either gone straight through the publisher or scanned in by hand. I used a laptop with screen reading software, JAWS again, and that got me where I needed to go. I was a music major for a little while, as I mentioned, and I was very lucky that our head of the arts department at the time, a gentleman named Dr. Jim Doring, was very, very kind and very generous in helping me figure out Braille music, which is not an easy thing to learn on its own. I'm going to brag on him for a second, but my twin brother just graduated UNC Greensboro with a music education degree, and he is going to be doing a wonderful job and is a wonderful composer and does it all through Braille music and electronic working, so it's definitely workable. I was very blessed to have professors that went to bat for me, people that would be willing to read assignments to me if they weren't done in time, though typically they were done in time. Then when I picked up communications and political science, our heads of the programs there and my professors were all just fantastic. Orientation and mobility on debate trips through our coaches, Dr. Ted Sheckles, and rest his soul, Professor John Mingus, were great for me. And then people in our political science, the answer was never no. The question was, how do you want to get it done? And whenever I had a plan, they were willing to act on it. Whenever I didn't have a plan, they were willing to sit down over a coffee and brainstorm how to get it done.
Wonderful. I've just been given notice from our engineer, Shay,
yes, sir,
that your brother was a blind idol winner, Shane Dittmer. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, sir. That would be my brother.
Well, we'll give him a little shout out here.
Yes, please do. He's shout out for that. Shout out. He just became engaged to a wonderful young woman, so we're excited for her to be part of the family. And he's just doing wonderfully.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
Published composer and fantastic piano player. Could not be a more proud brother.
That's great. Well, he's at a wonderful institution also, UNC Greensboro.
They, yes, sir.
They do a wonderful job with their music and performing arts.
Yes, sir, they do.
And Campbell does a wonderful job with legal education. So tell us about legal education from your perspective.
Well, I mean, it works. Again, it's all about building a team, right? That's the thing that I've learned is that you have accommodations and you can go and sue as much as you need to, and sometimes that's what you have to do. But the better thing is to build your team and make it collaborative rather than combative. Our head of disability support is Shay Heinz Glick, and she is wonderful. All of my textbooks, again, are electronic, and instead of scanning them by hand, we will go to the publisher and say, can you please send us a PDF copy? A lot of the time, the publisher tries to say, we don't, and they've gotten better, but in the beginning, they'd say, we don't have a PDF copy. And we'd say, yes, you do, unless every one of your textbooks is handwritten by monks, you have a PDF copy, and we'll go ahead and take that from you. You know, on average, and in general, people have been wonderful. My professors are good about sharing what they're writing on the board, though I'm not at all shy about saying, can you say that out loud? All of my readings are done electronically, so instead of carrying around the big books, like you mentioned earlier, I'm carrying around my laptop with software to be able to read these textbooks in PDF form and take notes. It takes a lot of memory. We get stood up, and they use the Socratic method, so they stand you up and they ask you questions about the case that nobody can hope to answer. Their goal is to make you feel uncomfortable not knowing the answer, to make you comfortable being uncomfortable, I guess. They give us the chance to do that, and I have to stand up, and typically I don't have notes. So it's a combination of knowing what I know and memorizing that, and knowing what I don't know and being able to ask for help. It served me well in moot court, where I compete. It served me well in mock trial and trial, in which I compete as well. And it's pushing me to be a stronger lawyer, stronger law student, and stronger advocate for my clients.
Well said.
One
point you made implicitly in that was that when they try to put you off and try to tell you one thing, you got to stand up for yourself. Do you find that that's true and something that you've got to do continually?
I mean, it's just the way of life, Joe. Sure, you're aware of that as well, just from your experience. It's something that we live through and that we work through. By and large, the people that I have the pleasure of studying with and studying, learning from at Campbell are wonderful people who are very kind and very willing to learn. A lot of it comes from ignorance. People just don't know. I'm oftentimes the first real live blind person that they've seen. It's kind of like an animal in the zoo. And so there's a patience there, but I have found people always willing and excited to learn and interested in trying to develop, and it helps them to sort of expand their horizons. I get the same experience at my internship at the Public Defender's Office here in Wake County this summer, and it forces you to be more creative. I have Howard, my guide dog, very, very generously provided by Guide Dogs of the Blind out in California, which is a wonderful organization of whom I'm very proud. And instead of going through and planning to have the conversation every day, no, I'm sorry, he's working, please don't pet him, we sent out an email to the entire Public Defender's Office, the entire District Attorney's Office, and all of our judges from Howard, in which he said he's working on his Juris Doctorate and has asked very kindly not to be petted and not to be bothered, but has said that if he is off harness, that he would love a scratch or three. And that has been overwhelmingly positive. I have not had any problems since that email went out. And in fact, it's been a networking tool. People want to get to know Howard, and I can usually push that into an opportunity to get coffee and learn about what they do and figure out how I can be a better attorney.
Very good.
Yes, sir.
So are you a first-year student or a second-year student?
I'm actually going into my third year, Joe.
Yeah, okay.
So I have one year left and then the bar, God willing.
Okay. So great experience at Campbell, and now you a summer clerk, summer intern.
Yes.
And where are you working this summer?
Like I said, I'm at the Public Defender's Office here in Wake County, so about two blocks from the law school, up on the fifth floor of the new Justice Center.
What are you doing for him?
I am an intern in the misdemeanor division, so I'm working one-on-one. We're sort of assigned, there are about seven of us right now, two different attorneys, so I have the pleasure of working with Ms. Charis Link, and I am helping her with her cases. I'm interviewing clients, I am arguing motions in front of the court, I am trying to work out plea deals with ADAs, assistant district attorneys. I'm trying to help our clients. We have one person that is currently investigating a service animal for a situation that they have, and I've been able to help gather resources for them so that while we're working on their case, we're also able to help them gain some independence that they very desperately want. Sort of a holistic view on law.
Well, the ability to intuitively know what questions to ask and what questions not to ask, they're the sorts of things that you don't get out of a book. They have to be intuitive. You finding that to be so? Tell us about your experiences.
I mean, growing up, I had a favorite quote that I had from a middle school teacher, and he said, "Practice makes better. You never get perfect."
Mm.
And I love that, and that's really what this is. You can learn from a textbook how to do trial, how to work with a client, but you learn a lot more from actually getting out and doing it. And it's exciting. I grew up in this community. I have been very fortunate to work with our Division for Services for the Blind that have taken great care of me. I've got Lions Club scholarships. I've been very, very blessed to live and work in this community and to be supported by them through private college and private law school. And I believe very strongly I have a need to give back to that community. That's why I'm doing this public defender internship. That's why I'm pushing. That's why I'm working in law school on our Campbell Law Review, where my research is predominantly on disability support in law. And that's why I'm working right now on getting my LLM, my master's in legal. In legal research and legal practice through Nottingham Trent University in the UK, and doing my research on new blind technology and how it's implicated by our Fourth Amendment right to privacy, and how it's also implicated by professional responsibility requirements for blind lawyers.
Well, that's excellent. So you're getting some insights about the comparative law of UK disability compared with the United States. Tell us a little bit about that. I'd love to hear what differences or how they're harmonious or...
Sure. Well, and again, this is a program that I've been accepted to through Campbell, and we're still getting applications out through LLM Nottingham Trent, but I'm very excited and I'm hopeful that we're not going to have any issues. The best story I can give you, I had the opportunity last summer through Baylor Law School to go to Scotland. And first, let me tell you, getting a service animal into the UK is not an easy thing. I was very lucky. I had a great vet in North Raleigh, Quail Corners, that helped me through the process there. And we were able to get Howard out there, no problems. When we arrived into St. Andrews, where golf was invented, a beautiful little seaside town, Howard was almost attacked by a gentleman who did not have a home, who also had dogs that were off-leash. And working with local law enforcement was a really interesting question. Luckily, he was not bitten, but he almost was. And working with the law enforcement in St. Andrews, who were just incredible, I learned a lot about the difference. They're actually, to some degree, have stronger protections for service animals than we do here. So we have some protections for attacking a service animal. But what's interesting about the UK, and specifically Scotland, is that they will treat an attack on the service animal the same they would treat an attack on the service animal handler. So there's actually a higher punishment and a higher criminal charge for people who allow their dogs to attack or who themselves attack a service animal than there would be in the U.S. where they're treated more as what's called a chattel. I think that's pretty cool.
That is cool. Speaking of the law and trial practice in the UK, are you familiar with the Rumpole or the Bailey series?
I am not. Tell me about it.
I'm going to highly recommend that to you. I like my legal fiction with a good amount of humor. And
yes.
Rumpole of the Bailey, an old Bailey hack, is a defense lawyer in London. And just wonderful short stories that I think you would enjoy and kind of round out your legal advocacy and handle your defense cases.
But I'll have to read those.
Third year is on the horizon.
Yes.
And it sounds to me like you're not going to be resting on your laurels. You have much to do in your third year, and one of which is you're writing for the Law Review.
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. Well, that's a great experience.
I'm loving it. I'm working well. Our Law Review and our new editor-in-chief are all wonderful people that are doing a very good job of making sure that I have jobs that are, you know, blind-friendly. A lot of the 2L experience is something called spading, 2L being second-year law students in Law Review. And spading is visually going through and checking line by line on citations using our standard citation form, what's called the Blue Book. That is a thing which is doable with ScreenReader, but it takes so much longer. And so realizing this and realizing we had a resource I was able to write onto the Law Review. My comment involves a way of changing the way we look at mental disabilities in order to get around a really, really old prohibition in law against considering somebody's mental disability and negligence. And so I was able to write on, and they realized that there was a talent there, and we were able to come up with different things for me to do. I helped plan a symposium. I've taken a look at some of the submissions for the next versions and the next portions of our Law Review in order to see which articles are going to be most effective. I've assisted in grading some of the Law Review submissions for people that are hoping to be on the Law Review this coming year. So areas where I can use my writing skill and my editing skill and just networking ability to better effect, which kind of goes to the basis of the experience I've had at Campbell and at Randolph-Macon and at Sanderson High School and in Wake County. There's a push to try to make everything perfectly accessible, and that's important, and there's a lot to be said there. There's also, just like anybody, a holistic examination of the person. We see where our skills are, and we try to put people where their skills are going to be most effective. Sometimes that requires some ingenuity and problem solving, but that's what law is for. It's not just for taking people to court. It's not just for arguing in front of a judge. It's not just for wearing fancy suits. It's for problem solving. We are counselors. It's our job to be creative and to be holistic and to be intentional about solving people's issues.
Very well said.
Thank
Very
you,
well said. The master's degree program that you're talking about doing, is that something that you will do remotely, or will you go back to the UK for that?
I'm very, very lucky that Campbell Law School is a partnership with Nottingham Trent. It's a very new thing, and it's going to allow me to get my JD, which is my law degree, and my LLM, my Master's of Law, at the same time. So I'm going to graduate next year at 25 years old with both degrees.
Fabulous.
I'm going to be heading back to the UK, presuming that Nottingham Trent accepts the application, and that application is due in August, September. But they seem to enjoy the last batch of Campbell students that have come through, so we're hopeful. Presuming acceptance, I'll be heading back to basically discuss and defend a dissertation come this October. And I'll be traveling out there with several other just brilliant law students that are as interested in trying to further their horizons and use advocacy to further academia as I am. That's the beautiful thing of writing, is it's the way we change minds. Our country, our legal system are founded on the written and spoken word. Rhetoric is how we make things better.
You're getting your LLM and your JD at the same time.
Yes, sir.
May I say, that is prodigious.
Thank you,
sir. So, a wonderful accomplishment. There's nothing but a bright horizon ahead for you.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. I want to give a shout out to one of our frequent listeners, Spencer Houck. And one of these days, I want you to meet Spencer. He's in high school here and one of our great fans. So,
yes, sir. I'd love that.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
One thing I'm going to do in follow-up, there's a legal maxim. I can't tell you what it is in Latin, but I'll get it to you. And I take it out of context. But the law does not respect the wishes of the dainty. Think that you are a prime example of one who has the aplomb and the diplomacy to get your points across in a way that effectively, and that's going to hold you in good stead as your legal career develops.
Well, thank you. Thank you for
so,
that, Joe.
We're going to wrap this up, Derek, and we're just pleased to have you. This will be one that we'll want to play and replay, and I've got a little outro I've got to read here. We've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. Please be sure to tune in next time on the fourth Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m. and rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 7 a.m. We hope you've enjoyed the show, discovered information about your legal rights and about obtaining equal access and full participation in your community. And I'm Joe Austin. Our guest was Derek Dittmer. Thank you so much for joining us, Derek.
You know what, Joe? This has been my pleasure. I really appreciate everything that we've gotten to do today and discussing all the things that we've gotten to do as part of a service animal project coordinator at Campbell and with everything else.
We will get together again.
Yes,
the content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. After it's broadcast, you can find us as a podcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org. Get your mom to tune into that. She will be proud of you. Of course, she's proud of you.
Thank you, sir.
And you'll be able to listen to it again and share it with others. If you have any comments or questions from today's episode or wish to share a topic that you want us to explore, please call us at 919-832-5138, 919-832-5138. You may also reach us via email at info@trrsnc.org. Thanks to Shay Hargett-Hill, our engineer. Until next time.